Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw, Burlington Business Park, Tullamore. Your main supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands. worshaw.ie.
Good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you until 8pm, bringing you the latest from the Midlands and further afield from the worlds of agriculture, food and agribusiness. Now, delighted to be back with you after a week and a lot of rain the last few days. Very, very heavy rain today and yesterday. It's the last thing we want, really, at this time of the year, coming to the end of the grazing season. Just checking Met Aaron before we come on here. And it looks to be somewhat drier for the weekend, but changeable again next week. So at this stage, we're hoping for a week or 10 days of good dry weather to prolong the grazing season for as long as possible. So fingers crossed, remains reasonably dry going forward. It's only the 5th of October and we did get a good burst of grass growth over the last couple of weeks. So there is lots of grazing yet to be done, weather permitting. On to this evening's programme. And this Friday is Bord Bia's National Potato Day and Romeo's Chip Shops, which have 21 restaurants nationwide and two here in the Midlands in my own hometown of Burr County Offaly. They have for the last number of years committed to using solely Irish potatoes for their chips. And with all of their potatoes coming from North County Dublin, it's farm to fork in a very straightforward supply chain. Dario McCary from Romeo's will join me for a chat a little later to speak about how his family have been involved in the takeaway business since 1959 and how Irish potatoes are second to none when it comes to chips. And as a result of National Potato Day on Friday, Romeo's are selling chips for half price on the day. So that's a good news story in itself. Last week, I spoke to Michael G. Phelan from Ballacolla. Michael is an exceptionally happy man after the weekend's result, which saw Clock Ballacolla beat Camross. And he will join me later for part two of our chat. Last week, Michael told us about a drainage project in Durrow, which lasted 4 years from 1929 to 1933. And this week, we will speak about his pedigree Angus cattle and his Kerry Hill sheep, and also his involvement in the Wooden Bridge Paddlers Association, aiming to increase water tourism in County Laois. When mentioning hurling there, I have to give a mention to Shinrón in County Offaly on securing their first senior hurling championship ever on Sunday last. My mother is from that part of the world and I have uncles and cousins over there, so I was shouting for the red and white of Shinrón on Sunday, and what a fantastic achievement it was. Thoroughly well deserved. Some fine dairy farms over in that neck of the woods, and I wonder, was there a cow milked at all last Monday over there? Chagas have just launched an economic survey that will give an update on incomes across all agricultural sectors for 2022. Now, they usually do this maybe 3 or 4 months into the year on the previous year, but this is an updated survey, if you will, for 2022, given the inputs crisis. And it really is a tale of two cities, with average dairy income seeing a rise from just under 100,000 per year in 2021 to a projected 130,000 forecasted for 2022. That's including single farm payment. That's the average farm size. It's between 90 and 100 cows. We'll get to the exact details on that a little bit later. But that's a 30% increase from 21 to 22. The increase in milk prices easily outstripping the increase in input costs, it seems. But it is a completely different story for the pig farmer, who's on the other end of that spectrum totally, with the average loss for 2022 looking to be in the region of an absolutely staggering €350,000. So later, economist Trevor Donlan from Chagas will join me to go through these figures and to see where the rest of the agri-industries fall in the middle. Everywhere a long, long, long way away from that average dairy farm income, as you would imagine. Now, as always, please text the show with comments, thoughts or questions to 083 3010 103. I'd be happy to put anything to our guests here this evening. And coming up now, we have Michael Moroney from the Farm and Forestry Contractors in Ireland. And he joins me to have a little chat about a couple of budget issues last week, which we just didn't have time to feature last week, but they're pertinent issues all the same. Michael, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thanks for having me on, MJ.
So last week... No problem at all, Michael. More than welcome. Last week, budget was announced, and look, with a lot of measures across the board, a lot of agri measures, but a lot of measures in general. But farmers and contractors weren't happy, especially contractors, about one specific angle, and that's in relation to something which is going to occur next February. Can you just elaborate on what that is, please, Michael?
Yeah, I think that the budget, in a sense, it masqueraded some points, and the impression was given, and correctly it was stated, that the National Oil Reserves Agency levy, called NORA, that would reduce from 2% to 0%. But, I mean, the key point about this is that the excise duty on green diesel is planned to be removed in February 23, which means that this 2% NORA levy is smaller than the back increased cost of diesel when the excise duty goes back on, because that excise duty was what, 5.6 cent a litre when it was removed, and it goes back on in 2023, and on top of that, by May 2023 we end up with the carbon tax, the next bout of carbon tax, and that, add the two together, and we're going to end up with somewhere in excess of 12 cent per litre for green diesel increase by May next year, and that's irrespective of any other market increases. Diesel is going to increase by that amount, irrespective of what happens in the world market. And none of that was mentioned in the budget. Like, it was all sort of glossed over. Lots of positives. And there was lots of positives for farming, let's be honest. You know, and they kept many of the schemes encouraging younger farmers, and that's to be supported. But the reality is that this increase in diesel cost is going to impact on farmers, and ultimately farmers are going to have to pay for that cost.
Yeah, it's a huge increase, Michael, and it did go under the radar, no question about it. It wasn't massively reported on over the course of the last week, and I know it is in a number of months' time, but it's a big, big increase, like 12 cents. We're not talking one or two here.
It's a very significant increase by the time we go from next year. And the fact that the Minister for Transport and Energy was making great play that he was reducing the NORA levy from 2% to 0%. It's sort of insignificant against the background where the excise duty is coming back on and where the carbon tax is coming back on. And it's almost as if the carbon tax is timed for the 1st of May, when the bulk of the fuel is used on Irish farms, in the silage harvest and into the grain harvest. Mm. And that's when the increase will come. And it also comes for householders at that time. But householders don't tend to use their diesel or their fuel oil, their heating oil, from May onwards. But this industry does tend to use it, and quite a bit. So we've had very significant increases in the last 12 months in terms of agri-diesel costs. You know, and in many cases, they've more than doubled. The other factor that wasn't mentioned into it is our sector, among our SCI members, are nearly all using AdBlue fuel additive now as part of the necessary fuel additive in modern engines. And the cost of AdBlue has gone up significantly. It's more than doubled. It's very close to gone up three times in value, in price. You know, a year ago we were buying 1,000 litres for around 300, 350 euro. That 1,000 litre cube is now costing nearly 1,000 euro.
Wow, that is some increase.
Yeah, so the sector, the contractor sector, has spent, the use of AdBlue is costing the farm contractor sector somewhere between 13 and 15 million a year. And there's absolutely no account taken of the fact that contractors have embraced that and are using that equipment and have bought new machinery and are using so much AdBlue in order to make their effort at climate action, because that's the only effort they can make. We don't have electric tractors and non-internal combustion engine equipment available for use in agriculture today. So there's no alternative. But we're being penalised, the whole sector in particular, and our sector in particular, where we're using, our contractors throughout the country are using somewhere in the region 350 million litres a year. We're paying the penalty, and we're being forced to pass that on to farmers, and farmers are ultimately paying for this extra cost.
And Michael, we are now at the end of the contracting season. Slurry finished up in the last period of time. Dung's finishing up. We're looking at what was a very, very, very challenging season for contractors from, as you say, maybe start of May through to now. How have your members weathered the storm? I'm sure you've been speaking to many of them on a daily basis in relation to all of these huge increases. Like, have they managed to keep their heads above water?
Well, only time will tell, MJ, and that'll be delivered when we see their accounts. Many of them are limited companies registered in the company's office. But the challenges are enormous, and the challenges have been enormous over the last 2 or 3 years before we were faced with these gigantic fuel price increases. And we look at, you know, take a cursory look at some of the accounts of contractors throughout the country, and you can see based on the basic balance sheet data, whereby the shareholder funds are the funds available to the people who own the company, have reduced in many, many cases. So their turnover hasn't reduced. but in other words, to become less profitable and been eating into their profits just in order to continue in business. And ultimately, that's a very difficult thing to continue. And, you know, when we look at the whole sector, in many, many respects, because of the increases that many contractors have had to charge their customers for this year, taking account of the huge increases in diesel, we would estimate that last year the value of the sector was about €700 million, and that this year the value of the sector is about gross €800 million. So if we look at that as a sector and look what's happening here, we're finding that our sector is delivering a huge VAT return to the government. And that's not taken into account of it, because that €800 million includes VAT at 13.5%. So well in excess of €120 million of that is going back into the state coffers through the farm contractor sector. And we're seeing that reflected in many of our members. And it has been a challenge this year, because once you increase the rates in order to cope with the increased cost, and it's not just diesel, I might add, you know, the cost increases this year have been in phenomenal in terms of new machinery prices. To buy a new baler, to buy a new mower, to buy a new plough, we are looking at 20% price increases versus last year. Parts prices have just escalated beyond belief. You know, we're looking at 30, 40% increases on parts prices for replacement parts. And then we're looking at lubrication oils doubled in cost. So all of those factors, plus obviously labour's got more expensive and labour availability is an issue. So there's a multiple of challenges. The fuel is the one that's most obvious, because it's very clear and it's quite transparent. But individually, farm contractors and our members in FCI have had to deal with huge costs that have been unprecedented in our sector. Yeah. And it will challenge some people into the future.
100%, Michael. And look, without the contractors, there's not much that can be done. We're going to be talking about dairy farm incomes in a moment and how they've increased. But look, dairy farmers, more than any other sector, are reliant on the contractors. And it's a symbiotic relationship. So everyone needs to be able to keep their heads above water. And no question about it, very challenging year for the contractors.
And like weather-wise, just to put into perspective, weather-wise, this was a good year, MJ, in terms of, you know, relatively easy conditions with which to work in terms of the silage harvest. And, you know, we had a dry summer. There were challenges towards the end of it with drought. But in anybody dealing with the grain harvest, the conditions were good. So, you know, many, many years there are other challenges. The weather becomes the dominant challenge. It wasn't the dominant challenge this year, but operating costs have become a challenge and they're not likely to go in the very near future.
No, unfortunately not, Michael. And on that, we will leave it there. Look, we'll be speaking to you again, and I'm going to say many thanks for joining me on the programme.
Thank you indeed. God bless.
Michael Moroney there from the Contractors Association. And as Michael said, you look, hugely challenging year. And look, no question about it, contractors are the rock bed of agriculture, and without them, there's no farming, really. There's no question about it. And a huge price increase. The ad blue. My word, going from 300-odd a litre to 300-odd for 1,000 litres to €1,000 for a litre. A euro for a litre of AdBlue, like, it's just meant to be an additive. It's not meant to be a huge cost like that. Michael did mention tillage there towards the end. And Tierlawn, the new name for Glanbia, they have announced their harvest prices for today. So green feed barley is €3.10 a tonne. And that's ex VAT. That's what they've announced today. So big increase on last year. It was €2.10 a tonne last year. So you're talking €100 a tonne, roughly 33% increase there on feed barley. So look, I'm going to say good news for tillage farmers. Tillage farmers are going to need it all given the increase in costs. And obviously it's going to be a knock-on effect then on the concentrate market as a result of that. So look, it kind of is what it is. €3.10 is the price, and that's roughly 33% up on last year. Now, coming up after the break, we're talking about farm incomes, and Chagas have done an interim survey for 2022, and we're going to see exactly how the different sectors are getting on, so stay tuned for that. And you're very welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103, and we're moving on to agri-incomes now. I'm joined by Trevor Donnellan, economist from Chagas. Trevor, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Delighted to be with you, MJ.
So Trevor, back in June we chatted about the definitive incomes for 2021, and this is a report that's out now, start of October. So it's I suppose it's kind of an interim report with projected figures for 2022, but they'll be there or thereabouts, I'd imagine. And I presume you're doing these as a result of price inflation, and you want to kind of get a view on where farmers are at for this year, given the circumstances.
Yeah, that's right, MJ. I mean, it's been a very unusual year, as everybody listening will know. So we've had to go back and look at 2022 on a couple of occasions this year to try to zero in on what we think the final outcome will actually look like. So there's been a lot of work done there, just pulling together, in particular, a lot of information around the cost side, in line with the discussion you just had there now. So we've done all that, and we've got our revised estimates now in play for 2022 across the various sectors.
Yeah, and we'll start off with the good news story of Irish agriculture, definitively, there's no question about it, and that is the forecasted income on dairy farms for 2022. So if I trace the listeners back to 2021, when I was speaking to you back in June, the average income was, I think it was about 96,400 or 98,600, it was something like that, it was just under 100,000 on a dairy farm. And that is looking like it's going to increase by more than 30% to €130,000 for the average Irish dairy farmer. This is an eye-watering figure, Trevor, and obviously milk price just completely outstripping the rise in inputs.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've had, you know, we need to be clear on that, I suppose. We have had an enormous increase in input costs across all the systems, including in dairy, but as you say, the path of the milk price over the course of 2022 has been absolutely extraordinary. Nobody saw that coming before the advent of the invasion of Ukraine. And yeah, like we're talking about an increase in milk production costs of around 10 cent a litre, which is completely unprecedented. We're up to about 36 cent a litre production cost or something like that. But the progression of the milk price over the course of the year and very high levels it's been at during the peak milk production months have meant that you know the increase in the value of milk sales is going to outstrip the increase in production costs quite considerably, to the tune, as you said, of about an extra 30 grand or more on the average dairy farm.
And we're talking the average dairy farm. What number of cows is that average dairy farm, Trevor?
The average dairy farm would be up around 90 dairy cows now at this stage across the country. There'd be slightly higher average herd size, we'll say, in kind of Leinster and a bit smaller in Munster and in the west. But yeah, around 90 cows now, or that kind of territory is what you're talking about.
So if we're 90 cows, just a quick calculation here in front of me, we're talking €1,444 per cow average income. Now, I suppose you have to take your single payment out of that. What's the average single payment on those farms? Maybe you don't have that info to hand.
No, yeah, I would. I mean, the average single farm payment, all payments for that matter, being around €20,000 or that, like. So you're still looking at over €1,000 a cow in terms of profit, we'll say, contributing to that income figure. So, you know, it's an extraordinary outcome, really.
Yeah, you're well over €1,000, Trevor. I'd say you'd be up close to maybe €1,150, €1,200, I'd say, on that, which is well north of that figure. I suppose that figure that you often have in your head, a really good dairy farmer can do €1,000 a cow. But you're looking well north of that. And I suppose you have to take into account that's the average. So there are going to be some really top operators doing well in excess of that. And then guys who are, you know, maybe not as efficient or not as highly stocked that are going to be underneeded. So it's important to be aware of that as well for the really uber efficient guys. It's more again.
Yeah. I mean, there is a range around that. And when we publish our final results for the National Farm Survey, you know, in kind of the spring or early summer of next year, we'll be able to see all of that. Like, but yeah, there will be considerable variation around that. The average figure hides a lot of the story. Sometimes that's an important thing. It's a very handy way to talk about numbers, but it can hide what's happening underneath, because there are, in spite of all the expansion in dairy, there are still some smallish dairy farms in the country that wouldn't obviously be achieving that kind of a figure in terms of income.
Yeah, the devil is in the detail, especially for the economists, yep. Trevor, no question about that. If we look through the beef side of things then, and you break it down between cattle rearing and cattle finishing, cattle rearing is looking like it's going to drop by 17% in 2022, and it's going to bring the average income back to €9,000, and that's including a single payment. And it kind of speaks for itself. It's very poor, but obviously, look, this is part time for the vast majority of people involved in it. The Finnish cattle setup then looks to be unchanged, and that's showing a profit of 17,000. So it does show that there is a margin there in cattle finishing if you're doing it correctly, I suppose, and if you're finishing the right kind of stock.
Yeah, and I mean, again, going back to the point you just made about averages. That's an average figure, and you know your bigger, more efficient finisher would obviously be doing considerably better than that €17,000 figure. But the reality, I suppose, on the beef side has been that the cost went up just the same as we saw in respect of dairy farms, but the improvement in terms of selling prices for animals just didn't keep pace.
No.
With that, and particularly in the context of sucker producers, so they're seeing their income dropping back in 2022, whereas the finishers have just managed to kind of stay where they are. And I suppose we should mention as well, MJDs are all in nominal terms, which means they're not taking into account the effect of inflation. So €17,000 this year is not going to buy you the same amount as €17,000 last year, you know.
Yeah, no, 100%, unfortunately not. Also, just looking at sheep farms, and sheep farms, again, are looking at a drop, average drop of 15%, and the average income then, 17,700. Look, as we said, there's going to be the higher stock, the more efficient guys are going to be earning more than that, and then there's going to be lower stocks as well. I suppose for sheep and for cattle, you do have to take into account large tracts of the likes of maybe Connacht and stuff that are going to be very, very lowly stocked, and they are going to bring down the average. It is important to keep that in mind. However, there is going to be a drop in sheep farms regardless. Like I'd say it's the same again as the beef, the increase in price just hasn't kept up with the increase in inputs.
Yeah, I mean the sheep sector has been coming over the last, we'll say, 3 or 4 years, has enjoyed a good level of growth in lamb prices, and the situation in 2022, I guess, is that there has been, the costs have crept up, and the lamb price hasn't moved on to the extent that it would have needed to keep income levels at their level in 2021, which was it was quite a respectable figure by the standards of the dry stock sector of about €20,000 last year. So yeah, the drop back there now to 17,000-18,000 territory is disappointing, I suppose, for sheep farmers, because things have been moving along reasonably well in terms of a bit of progress year by year over the last four or five years in terms of sheep farm incomes.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's unfortunate to see. And factories pulling prices again this week, which isn't a good sign. Tillage, we're looking at a fall of roughly 10%. And it is bringing the system back to the roughly 50,000 mark. Shows the scale of the way tillage farmers are gone. Guys are in it now. We're in it in a big, big, big way. I know Glanbia's grain price just announced today might affect that number slightly. But we are talking, look, a drop in that as well. But just before I let you go, Trevor, the big, big, big one, and it is a tale of two cities, the dairy versus the pig farmer. Pig farmer looking at having losses in 2022 of €350,000. What do you say to a figure like that? Will pig farmers be able to go on after this? You may do this 1 year, but, you know, there's no possible way you'll do it too.
Yeah, but like if you're in the pig business in Ireland these days, you're talking kind of lottery numbers in terms of output and costs. So like it's a lot easier to clock up the kind of serious losses that we've talked about in our report that was released earlier this week in the pig sector. Very, very tight margin type system, very large volumes, and the situation for them just has been one where they were caught very badly with pig prices on the slide, just as the feed and energy costs started to take off, and they got squeezed very, very hardly as a result of that. So we have had exits from pig production this year, and it's not clear that the contraction in pig production that we've seen as a result of that is going to be taken up, we'll say, by other producers. So it's it'll be a lesson, I'd say, that pig producers won't forget very quickly.
No, definitely not. Trevor, great report, I have to say, and some great detail on it. It is available there on the Chagas website. And look, we will speak to you again when you have the concrete figure for 2022 done. But look, there won't be a million miles off that. And I say many thanks for joining me this evening, Trevor.
No problem.
Trevor Donlan there from Chagas. I'm going to go to a break immediately, because coming up after the break, we're talking about all things potatoes and specifically chips. And I have Dario McCarry from Romeo's Diner. And Romeo's use solely Irish potatoes in their chip shops all over the country. And it's National Potato Day this Friday, and they're going to have half price chips. So let's stay tuned for that. And you're very welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103. Just in relation to the last piece, texting from a listener saying a lot of beef farms are going to lose money this year, let alone make any. And I suppose just with the likes of the cattle rearing enterprise there, Chagas forecasting incomes of 9,000. That's including single payments. So single payments will be in excess of 9,000 on lots of farms. So yes, a lot of them will lose money, and you'll be looking at your single payment, trying to buffer up the balance. And in some cases, I suppose you'll even, the single payment will even be outstripped by the losses. But they are average figures. So whatever way you look at it, not good news in beef farms for 2022. Now, as I said, we are moving on to talk about potatoes and chips in particular. It's National Potato Day on Friday, and I have Dario McCarry on the line from Romeo's Diners, and they are throughout the country, and two branches in the Midlands, in my own hometown of Burr, County Offaly. So Dario, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Hey MJ, great to talk to you.
You're more than welcome, Dario. Look, we're going to talk about how you use Irish potatoes in your restaurants throughout the country in a moment. But first, look, the name McCarry, it's synonymous with chip shops in Ireland. Can you take us back to yesteryear, to the start of the business, when one of your relatives came over from Italy and decided to set up shop here in Ireland? When did that occur?
Well, back in 59, my grandfather would have come to Dublin and set up his first shop in Bolton Street. And I suppose it's gone from there. My father's involved in the business, and now I'd be the third generation.
And
Dario,
to ask a question, when people go to Italy, they usually don't eat fish and chips. So how are the Italians so synonymous with chips when in the mother country, in Italy, you don't particularly have chip shops?
Well, I think the story goes back. I believe Giuseppe Cervi was the man's name. When he got off a boat in Cork or Dublin, he started a little stand selling potatoes, and he spotted the Irish people's love for them, and I think it developed from there. The funny thing is, if you go to Italy, you'll be doing well to find a fish and chip shop.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, but you obviously, look, the Italians are, you're good entrepreneurs, there's no question about it, and the Irish affiliation with potatoes obviously goes back to yesteryear, and there's no question about it. Like, you have a lot of shops around the country. Irish people love chips.
They certainly do. Well, it's especially coming into the winter now. It's a bit of a chilly evening out there. You can't beat a nice bag of hot, fresh chips.
And you have signed up a number of years ago, Dario. You were using potatoes from all over the wherever, coming from England, I suppose, yeah. A lot of them in reality. And a number of years ago, then you signed up with an Irish producer, and your affiliation has gone from strength to strength. Can you just give us a bit of background on that and how it's working now?
Yeah, just over 10 years ago, we started working with Lawrence and Alda Flynn in North Dublin, and they grew a crop of marquees, and every year since, we've been working closely with them. And as soon as the crop is ready each year, we use it exclusively, and it's just gone from strength to strength. The relationship between ourselves and themselves has been probably one of the major factors, two family businesses, and it's taken a fair bit of work back and forth over the years, tweaking here and there, but even this year so far, the crop is excellent.
Yeah, and it's a really successful relationship you have. And even from, a carbon footprint perspective, all these potatoes are grown in North County Dublin. Vast majority of your shops are in County Dublin. Now you're a couple down the Midlands in Kildare. But like from a farm-to-fork perspective, it's minimal drive. It's a minimal supply chain as well, as in they come from the field into your shops and they turn straight into food. It's a very straightforward system. And obviously it must be working well for everyone involved if you're still going after this Lent.
Yeah, it's going great. As a supply chain, it really doesn't get much more local. Our own distribution centre is approximately 15 minutes from the Flynn's yard. So, as I said, it really doesn't get much closer, and it's really genuine local produce.
And Dario, we're speaking on the programme here regularly now about the costs of inputs, and obviously your own shops are heavily involved in gas and electricity and whatnot. So look, you're seeing those huge increases as well. How are you finding business at the moment? How are you finding trading? Obviously, look, it is tough. It's tough for everyone, and you're no different.
Well, look, thankfully, we're a well-established business, and we're trading a very long time. But definitely in my memory, it's certainly the toughest time in the last few years. And now the recent energy crisis is a massive challenge for even ourselves. Most of our locations will be using both gas and electricity, so we're experiencing the massive increases on both sides. But I think, like many people, we're just reviewing every part of the business to see where we can try and reduce some usage. And then, obviously, since last week, we're waiting on some more details, hopefully, on the scheme from the government, and we'll see what that holds, hopefully some support to help.
Yeah, well, it is a good initiative, and I suppose what businesses are hoping is they're going to fall under the threshold, because it is a fine line. Like if you're 51% over, 49% over, if you go one the wrong way, you're not going to get into it. But if you fall into the threshold, then it could mean a significant saving. So I presume for the likes of yourselves, your ESB bills have gone up exponentially since last year.
They've gone up in multiples. Like, you know, these aren't small increases. The numbers are huge multiples, but as I said, we like to look on the positive side. We're a family business and we're in it for the long term. So certainly, I think, tricky times ahead in the short term, but we'll certainly be trying our best to trade through it.
And in relation to consumer spend, so obviously the consumers out there are feeling the pinch in relation to all of these as well. I know a takeaway is it is a treat, and it's something people probably have at the weekends and whatnot. However, are you finding just that lack of money in the household is coming across the counter to you? Are you seeing less of a take at the moment, or how is business?
Yeah, business is it's a mixed bag depending on location. We have definitely noticed in the last few weeks that the consumers are much more price conscious, and I do think as the energy bills even arrive into homes, everybody is feeling the pinch. But it's a challenging time from a business point of view. It's a difficult balancing act. We're trying to control costs and still deliver value to the customer. So that's where the challenge lies for ourselves.
And that value you're delivering to the customer is occurring this Friday. So we'll finish on a good news story. Dario, can you tell us what you're doing this Friday?
So to celebrate National Potato Day this coming Friday, it's going to be half-price chips in all our Romeo stores in-store. And we just want to celebrate what we believe is a great local relationship between ourselves and the Flynn's and growing Irish potatoes. Two proud Irish businesses, and as we said, despite challenging times, looking forward to the long-term positive future.
Lovely stuff. Well, Dario, say many thanks for that, and all the best for the future, and thanks for joining me here in the programme.
Great to talk to you, MJ. Have a good evening.
Dario McCarry there from Romeo's, and a half price chips this weekend. So if you're around the Midlands, around Burr, two shops there in Burr, and then I believe one in Kildare and a lot in Dublin, over 21 stores and on the go there 60 odd years. And look, as I said, it is a very straightforward supply system using Irish potatoes in all of those shops, and it's farm to fork really in a very straightforward way. And I know that business like that, I suppose, look, is going to be able to weather the storm. We talked about this last week with IFAC, and when we were talking to Declan McAvoy, we were asking what businesses are going to be able to withstand this turbulent time. And it is those family run businesses that basically have lots of money made over the last number of years. They're going to be able to sustain a couple of years of toughness. And they are the businesses that are going to get through it, but it's the burgeoning upcoming businesses that are going to really feel it and really struggle, and that's the way of it going forward. Now, coming up after the break, I'm going to be speaking to Michael G. Phelan from Ballacolla. We're going to be talking about the Wooden Bridge Paddlers Association and also his pedigree Angus's and Kerry Hill sheep. So stay tuned for that. And you're very welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103. And I'm joined by Michael G. Phelan from Ballacolla. Michael G., many thanks for taking my call this evening.
No, but good man. How are you keeping?
Part two of our chat, Michael. We were speaking last week and we ended up talking at length about the drainage project which occurred in Durrow from 1929 to 1933, and I had you on the programme because there was a lovely piece on the Farming Independent last week in relation to your enterprise and also your association with the Wooden Bridge Paddlers, and that's what we're going to speak about this evening. So firstly, Michael G, just on your farming enterprise, can you tell us exactly what you're farming and what the system is?
Well, sure, I've Sucklers, I suppose it's an enterprise there where I would have all pedigree Angus, everything I would have in the place like would be an Angus, and they're all registered at the present day. And I keep a small flock of sheep there as well. They're Kerry Hill sheep. They're purebred Kerry Hill sheep as well. So they are, yeah.
And how did you get into the Kerry Hill sheep, Michael? What was the background of that?
Well, I suppose it was going back a long time. I suppose when I was younger, we did have sheep, but then I suppose at one particular stage we were milking cows, so. I suppose to make room for the cows, we got rid of the sheep. But I got back into them then briefly for another stage. And then in more recent years, I always kind of had a bit of an odd ooh for them, if you like to call it that, you know. So I was involved for a short time, on and off, with the Irish Sheepdogs Association. Well, I always had an idea, an interest in that type of thing. And there was a fellow then down our way here, Paul Walker, who was very much into that particular sport, and became that there was a sheepdog trial in Ballacolla here at a donkey derby at one time, and that we were trained and getting sheep ready for it. I suppose I used to be getting my own neighbour, and then we decided we would get back into the sheep ourselves, like, and to pick one breed over another, I suppose. Ones that would suit the dog and that type of thing, and the look of the Kerry Hill as well, like they're a nice sheep with the black, with the white face and the black markings around the eyes and ears and nose and that, like, you know. I got into them, but I was looking for something that would be, I suppose, more or less on the rare breed side, and that's where they were. They were actually on the rare breed list at one particular stage. They're not on it now, but that was more or less.
Are they a big sheep, Michael?
No, they're
like
kind of a medium. They're probably a kind of a middle of the road, medium type of sheep. So they are, you know. They wouldn't be a huge sheep, but they wouldn't be smaller either. Like, you know, they'd be middle of the road. We could call them, like, you know.
Yeah, and both of your farming enterprises then are pedigrees, you say, are purebred, and the Angus's obviously over the course of the last few years, no problem getting rid of an Angus bull now, given the increase in dairy farm numbers.
That's right. Yeah, there's no problem whatsoever with getting rid of. Of the Angus bulls. My problem is I wouldn't have enough of them now, because I'm on a good few years, I'm on a long time, so I am. We would have a name probably built up, people would know and be repeat buyers going back all along. And I find, like, even over the last couple of years now, that I sell them an awful lot younger than I did maybe more back 5 or 6 years ago. I wouldn't have sold them maybe until they were almost coming to 2 year old or that way, but they're picked up now. Shortly after they being a year old, and some of the local lads around me, even relations to me on there, who would come looking maybe in April or that way, and I wouldn't have anything for them at all to be gone before early January nowadays, like, you know.
Yeah, so, it's a kind of a straightforward model again, purchasing those bulls for the dairy farmers as well, though, as in they'll do the job and then they'll fatten them up maybe after 2 years and they'll get as much as they paid for them. So it's, you know what I mean, it's not a hard sell. Another thing I want to speak to you, Michael G, apart from the farming, is your association with the Wooden Bridge Paddlers. Now, something you don't count County Leash as being well known for, and that's water tourism, but that's what you're at with this association. Can you tell us a little bit about this? What exactly do you do?
Well, I suppose you're referring to the Blue Way there development there, MJ, like with that As well as going back to the Wooden Bridge Peddlers, their history goes back probably to 1998, 1999, like, and I suppose it's an association of a lot of lads who lived along the riverbank local, and their friends in Douro and wherever, you know, getting together, messing around in the river and wanting or another, and then we did have a boat for many years before that, and play acting with rafts and wanting or another, but then we got a couple of the favourite last boats. And the Wooden Bridge Paddlers was born probably, as I say, sometime around 1998, 1999, when we started doing charity runs for the cultural centre in particular, like, you know. And then, you know, it branched out, and we've done a good few charity events back in those years, and then raft racing took part in it and all of that. But in more recent times, then, I suppose we've gone into the more, took an interest in developing the river as maybe a tourism amenity, you know, because the Erkenna River, where we are based on the Wooden Bridge, is, I suppose, halfway between, well, Douro would be 5 kilometres down below, downstream, where Rathdowney would be about 6.5 kilometres upstream. But, like, you know, the Erkenna River flows through both towns there, and to develop, what we're aiming to do is to develop it as a tourism amenity. And that probably took off there in around 2014, when Mark Clancy, actually, who was working with the Leash Partnership at the time, seeing where it was on one of the websites of the Waterways Ireland or whatever, where you could submit your own section of river as if you thought it was suitable for a Blue Way trail. And they answered us back, like, maybe in around 2015, and they've done a feasibility study on it, and they talked to the section between Douro and Boston Bridge, which is 7.5 kilometres upstream of Douro, like, and right under the M8 motorway there, would be totally suitable for a Blue Way trail. And the development started out of there. And
a blue way trail, Michael G, being something that people can canoe on, essentially, as opposed to a greenway, people something can they can cycle on. That's your difference.
Absolutely,
really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Blue Ways Ireland, you know, they have developed Blue Ways right throughout the country, but probably on more of the major rivers and on more of the lakes and that type of thing, like, you know. If you do get Blue Way status, which we have got preliminary accreditation to Irish Blue Ways, to Blue Way Ireland at the minute, but when you are fully accredited, you will go up on their website one thing or another, and it will draw tourism to the area. And like, I think that, you know, Leash is no different than any other county in Ireland. Like, you know, why stand back from it? Why not develop it? And because, you know, all of the different cafes and shops and whatever will have some spin-off bike hire, canoe hire, whatever, out of it afterwards. So that's where the project started. But I suppose the development of the river goes back a long ways before that, you know, because I suppose, like, we have been beating the drum, like, for a good few years, like, from an agricultural perspective as well, to do some maintenance work on the river, because the maintenance, we'll say, program to us on the rivers has ceased probably around 50 years ago, like, you know, really, and no development work has gone on any river since.
And lots of work needed to be done on it, Michael G, no question about it. Say, like, a lot of water courses in Ireland. But on that, I'm going to have to leave it there. No doubt, with the likes of yourself involved in it, the Blue Way status is going to go from preliminary to definitive, I'd say, in the not too distant future. You're a passionate man about everything you're involved with, Michael, no question about it. And I'm going to say,
but just before you finish up there, like, you know, I suppose one of the things is, you're probably off on time maybe for it, but you know, I was just going to say, like, you know, that some of the things that really hold it up, like, is the red tape that's involved in all of this.
Like every area, Michael G, I was going to say, but I will have to leave it there because I only have 10 seconds left, and I'm going to say many thanks for joining me on the programme this evening, and I'm going to say many thanks to you, the listener, as well, for joining in. Show is repeated on Sunday morning at 7:30, 7 a.m. I should say, and I'm back with you this time next week at 7 p.m. So good night and God bless.